Gavlik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Well, the post is broken. Matthews in it.
Boy, oh boy, wow, wee.
He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
This is the Super Footy Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Round 8 edition of the Super Footy Podcast. There is so much to unpack across the AFL this week, as always. Coming up here, we'll be joined by Mark McClure, former Carlton captain, as the Blues, well, sort of look forward to a Saturday afternoon at the G to make amends, but of course facing the second place Collingwood, so it's going to be a hell of a tough task for them. We'll catch up with Mark and get his really honest views on the Blues, and also be joined by senior coach of the GWS Giants, sitting third and pretty on the AFL ladder. Leon Cameron will be joining us. As always, I'm joined by Herald Sun chief football writer Mark Robinson. Robbo, how are you?
G'day, Lauren. Fantastic. I'm really well, thanks.
That's good to hear. And BT, Brian Taylor, it's good to have you with us.
Couldn't be better, Lauren. Nice to be here.
Good to hear. And Ando, John Anderson, Herald Sun columnist.
Yeah, you're in my peak. Oh, what a topic you used to say, fantastic and getting better.
That's exactly right. And you're not the only ones joining us. We're pleased to have live on the Herald Sun website today, live streaming. So if you are listening into us on the Herald Sun website, welcome. It's great to have you with us for the start of today's Super Footy podcast. But we'll
Nice T-shirt, Brian, for the first live podcast. That's a ripper.
Oh, are we on live? Yeah. Where's the camera? Oh, Jesus, no one told me.
You're not used to TV, Brian. He's just getting the feel for it. You'll be good in a few years with a bit of practice.
No one told me that.
A new initiative. Well, we just thought we'd catch you on the hop a little bit there. Well, we'll start very, very quickly. We'll just whip through them before we drill down into some of the bigger issues across the AFL at the moment. The good, the bad and the ugly. I can't really go past Aaron Norton for the good Saturday night. Robbo, you sat down with him at the start of the season. The stress-free bulldog. And, geez, he didn't have a lot of stress on Saturday night, did he?
Oh, no, he was absolutely sensational. There's not a person who's watching football and watching that game who would have thought, this is a bit heavenly, this. We have not seen this for so long. I think he took 9, Carey. Actually, it was really interesting. Someone put Carey's 10 contested marks on social media yesterday. And I thought, I might have a look at this.
Were they real?
Yeah, just to remember, how great Carey was. And
Robbo, you're in love with this kid. You do the story, and then
we all fall in love with our kid. We do.
I'll be devil's advocate. Who was he playing on? So
Broad.
Alex Rance wasn't there.
Yeah, Broad.
David Asprey wasn't there.
Jesus Christ. So they're two of the best.
I love Norton as well. I'm not trying to put the kid down. And I was out with a group of 21-year-old boys on Saturday night. All they were talking about was Aaron Norton. So that excitement, the competition needs.
Of course we need that, Brian.
Is there a better contested mark at the moment, Brian?
Than Aaron Norton?
Yeah.
Oh, there's probably 10. but, you know, he's a good mark and he's going to catch a few and miss a few. But he's not great yet. He's just had a couple of good games where he's taken some really nice marks. What we want to see him is do that a la Wayne Carey over 15 years.
But the sport can be so boring that when a person like Aaron Norton has a game like he does on the weekend,
true.
I actually think all of us, we reach for him to say, oh,
thank goodness.
You're great because football has lost so much of, especially the big marking, goal kicking forward. You know, which led us on the week, I don't know about you guys, but it led us into conversations about Lockett, Dunstall, Modra, these sort of characters, and Carey, and that brought great excitement thinking about them.
And what's giving these guys a chance, I reckon, Ando, is I think the new rules, without even knowing it, I don't personally think they've worked much, but one thing they have done, players seem to be holding their position longer, and the forwards are staying deeper for longer.
Well, it's worked then, hasn't it? They stretch the ground.
Probably. They're stretching the ground more, and it's giving the opportunity for someone like Aaron Norton to jump over a pack. There's someone actually in front of him.
If you ask Tom Hawkins, he would say that's definitely the case. And we all know up and down, he's up and down the track the last 3 or 4 years, so he's had to change his fitness and his weight and the rest of it. Now he can go be closer to goal a lot of the time, even though he plays very comfortably up the ground, because he's probably the best field kick. And I heard you talking about kicking on the weekend. He's kicking, not for goal, which is the left for right, which you described accurately, but his general field kicking left and right foot is as good as anyone in the game. Tom Hawkins is as good a field kick as anyone in the game.
That's fair. What about the fact Jeremy Cameron's got 30 goals? at round seven, which is really, really strong. The second best goal kicker is two of them. De Goey.
He's almost doubled him.
And yeah. Tom Lynch, 17 goals after seven games. And the new rules was all about giving opportunity for the big forwards to come back and kick goals, Brian.
And the thing about exciting about that, Ando, is that the last guy to be 30 goals after seven rounds was Buddy Franklin. He kicked 100 in that particular year. One before that was Favola, who ended up with 99, was it?
Yeah, but they're not working. We're not getting the return of the big key forwards.
Just on Lynch, you wrote about him, Robbo, today. Tom Lynch, the person best placed to tell you how Tom Lynch is going and how hard it is to leave a club with a patella injury is the bloke sitting next to us, because he did it. Mm. You had a patella knee problem. You left Richmond, went to Collingwood. Are you fearful for Lynch, or do you think it's just an adjustment time for
him? No, I think it's definitely adjustment time for him. I was listening to this conversation on one of the footy programs last night, and I was thinking to myself, gee, you know, he just needs time. He really does. Foreign club. We know he's a really good player. We know he's going to get there eventually. Just needs to fit in down the club. It's a matter of time for him.
How long really is. He was really aggressive.
And he needs all
year. He was really aggressive up at the Suns. Like, he was fearless in the air, just fearless. He'd go, and he was talking to Alistair Lynch about it and for today's story, and Lynchy was covering all the games up there. He goes, mate, he was just so tough, so powerful. That seems to have gone from his game. It's as though he's lost the confidence to be that aggressive forward. No disrespect to Jackson Trengove, none, and please don't take this. Trengove's been a really solid Dower defender for a long, long time. Tom Lynch was verging on becoming one of the best players in the game. I think he's dropped.
He's probably got to get his head around it. At the Gold Coast, he had to do everything. He was the main focal point, and, you know, he had to make it work. At Richmond, he's got to get his head around just doing his little piece. He probably doesn't realise that. He probably still thinks he's got to win the game and kick four.
Well, especially with Jack out now, too.
Yeah.
I mean, the first few weeks, as you say, adjusting with the small forwards, and then Jack Riewoldt being out for 8 weeks. Probably, whether it's consciously or subconsciously, and because he is attuned to that from the Gold Coast, of that, oh, I'm the key forward.
And just with the knee, you don't know how much. You know, when you come back from a knee injury, the thing about a knee injury is, can I run and jump really firmly on someone's back and compress my knee so my heel touches my bum, and is it going to be okay? And that's the thing mentally you've got to get over in your brain, and how much flexibility, how good is it? Can I do what I used to do at the Gold Coast?
How long did it take you, Brian?
And I reckon sometimes when you come back from an injury like that, I reckon it can take half a year. And in fact, it happens when you do that. And I remember once when I was coming back from training from a knee injury, and what got my confidence up and said to myself, I can do this, was we were at training just messing around, and I took basically an accidental mark. And my knee flexed completely, and I went, I'm okay.
Right.
I can do this. I'm okay. You know, and I reckon until that moment comes, you're not quite sure.
Well, of course, Tom Lynch, unfortunately, Robbo, and as you wrote in the Monday Herald Sun, you're concerned about him. He was one of the bad. What about the ugly? Carlton, you can't really go past them. We'll be catching up with Sellers shortly. Ando, could you go past them as the ugly for the weekend?
Carlton North Melbourne was a masterpiece compared to that crap that was over in Adelaide. Adelaide and Freo. There was 5 minutes to go in the third quarter, and you were watching it, Robbo. They were two goals apiece.
Yeah, I know.
And I'd watched the North game. I actually enjoyed the North Carlton game. And I'm not putting crap on Carlton, but North played the brand of footy we want them to play. Taylor Garner came back on the side, a kid who hasn't played since 2007.
How close did the Melbourne Hawthorne game come then?
In terms of...
And being not so good, not very watchable.
No, it wasn't watchable. At least it was a contest, though, wasn't it? It was close. Mm.
Well, yeah, and the finish, the last 15 minutes of that quarter was pretty solid. I watched the Fremantle-Adelaide game. And it's really interesting. I've heard people say that we're just mesmerised by the contest. But being on a Sunday night and I'm writing, I was listening to the commentary, which I do a lot as I write. And I look up and I look down. And I wasn't looking up a lot because the commentators
didn't go up.
They weren't going up. Yeah. They weren't going up. So I wasn't really.
You always know with the commentators when they start just asking questions and telling stories.
Oh, is that what you do? Is
there's
you
nothing happening.
I haven't noticed that, Brian.
A bit of if they kick another four, this game is on. Yeah. What do you do?
Do you get directions saying you've got to pump this game up?
Listen, we don't get any directions.
No, of course not, Brian. That would never happen, would it?
You know what? I barrack as a commentator for the team coming second always.
Yep.
So I'm always barracking for the team coming second because I want the close finish. So it's as simple as that for me. So if they're eight down, I still think they can win, but it's all to do the combination with the time clock. Have they got time? And there is a cut-off point. And if you're eight down and there's 10 minutes left, I think you're cooked.
The old Lee Matthews theory, I suppose.
Yeah, goal a minute.
Well, I'm going to pick your brains a little bit later on about commentary and commentary etiquette because, of course, the passing of the great Mike Williamson has got a lot of commentators and the way that they go about it front of mind with a lot of people. So we'll catch up with you a bit later about that. But
and Roaming Brian, the snub. I got told this. I was at a funeral on Friday. I was at the wake, so I was in a pub watching Port Adelaide, and someone said to me, Brian was snubbed.
Oh, well,
and I thought, I'll ask him on Tuesday.
Save it for a little bit later on.
Not the first time.
Because there's a massive issue that's been the talk of the town over the last 24 hours, and it centres around a Melbourne player drinking on Sunday afternoon. Of course, it's Stephen May. He's had his fitness battles, his injury battles over the last few weeks. But Melbourne have obviously got an issue with an injured player drinking. Now, every club's different, as we know. Where do we all sit on this story?
I can tell you, Lauren, I remember a player years ago who was, he's actually playing, but his way of disguising the fact he was having a drink was to get a coffee cup or put a tea bag in it instead of the nightclub sipping from that. He's sitting next to me at the moment. It's not Mark Robinson. I'm like, so you did do that. I remember you doing it at Billboard.
The nickname BT. Well, maybe that was
maybe the BT. Do you remember doing that, Brian?
No, I don't.
Yeah, Stephen May is a different kettle fish altogether. That's a club rule.
How much did he have?
Well, it doesn't matter. If it's a club rule, it's a club rule.
So. Surely every player can have a beer, can't they?
Yeah, but you have to be ready. Don't be stupid enough to get caught doing it publicly. Yeah. Well,
did you see the photo? It was a sneaky little photo from down low that some gutless... I want to really express myself, but I can't. A person took that photo, sneaky, it annoys me.
That's what happens in society.
I know.
If you're a coach like Rocket Ed, you go and address the troops and some mongrel takes video of it and then releases it. I mean, that's...
Where do I sit? I sit, if it's a beer or two, it's fine. If he's been there all day drinking, it's not.
What's he there for? 4 hours, apparently?
Because this is where it gets interesting, isn't it? That the photo being taken, the story being reported... seems to become the talking point for a lot of people that, oh, this shouldn't be reported. Well, I think park that for a minute because the fact that it's being reported is because the Demons have got an issue with it.
Yeah, and he apologised to the players. So that was the story. And then we've all now got an opinion on whether a player should drink or not. The club's got a ban. They've got a ban. He's got to follow the rules.
Have they got
other
a ban?
Club? Yeah,
they've got a ban.
They've got a blanket
Max
ban.
Max said there's a blanket ban. So.
Oh, okay. On players in rehab.
So I wasn't aware of that.
And he's in rehab for 10 weeks.
It hasn't made a great start for Stephen May.
No, it hasn't.
There's a bit of a pylon on Stephen May,
though. So Kidu came down from the territory to go to school at Melbourne Grammar as a boarder on a scholarship. Did very well there. Was picked up by Scotty Clayton at the Gold Coast. Had a few hiccups early on in his career, as a lot of players do. I reckon there was one incident over in America with Campbell Brown, comes to mind. Then comes back, gets his act together, ends up being a club captain. An All-Australian, am I right in saying that?
No.
Certainly All-Australian squad.
All-Australian squad.
And then comes down to Melbourne so far. Look, well, it's been ordinary so far.
With all that, new club and what's happened at Melbourne, he's probably in his situation, when you look at realistically, got to do everything right and he hasn't.
Mm. Yes, and there's a pile-on. There's a pylon on Stephen May in the last 24 hours. There's something else. And he said today to the players he's going through some personal issues. Now, that presents another problem for fans out there, supporters out there, because that could be mental health, that could be him dealing with something which leads to mental health, which means that nothing can be discussed, Brian, because no one talks about mental health. So Melbourne supporters might be kept in the dark about that.
There's some good news coming from Melbourne, though, on the back of all the bad news. And there's been articles written about it over the last couple of days. But, you know, Jake Lever is going to be... He's ready to play now. He's in full training now. And he reckons he could play now. He's probably going to be a couple of weeks away. But he is ready to go. So that's great news for them. That's a bit of that question. Will he play straight away in the ones? I don't think so. I reckon you'll find...
See him at Casey?
I think you'll see him at Casey for 1 or 2 weeks at least.
Yeah, especially for his role.
Yep.
You need timing. You need confidence. You just can't go and play AFL football and be that interceptor. Well, that is great news. Yeah. It might all fall into place for.
Will it be too late?
Melbourne?
There's something about Melbourne still with me. I gave them a chance to win on a really good chance to win on the weekend. They'll win this week against Gold Coast, and then they've got a really tough 4 weeks coming up. But there's something about them that says to me, give them a chance. They're still there. What is it? Why am I being lured by that?
Because you saw them last year in that back half of the season before the demolition and embarrassment of the West Coast. Before that, they were arguably the form team of the competition.
Confidence is the problem with them at the moment. Yeah. That's all it is. How do you get that back?
They've got seven players who are certain selections in their top 22 not playing. No other side, I think, can match that. That's a lot of players.
Let's hope. Because we want teams rushing and coming, don't we?
Yeah,
we don't want teams out of the mix and not performing. We want them rushing and coming. Everyone thinks, who have they got, BT, off the top of your head?
So Melbourne, they've got Gold Coast, I mentioned this week. Then they've got West Coast, GWS, Adelaide and Collingwood before the bye.
Where's the West Coast game?
The West Coast game is over there in Perth. And then after the bye, Ando, it actually looks all right. So they've got those four tough games going into the bye. But then after the bye, they play Fremantle, Brisbane, Carlton, the Western Bulldogs, St Kilda.
Those games are all relevant when you get them. Go to Geelong's draw, and I'll tell you this, Geelong think, okay, we've had a hard first 6 or 7 weeks, then it gets easy. Who are the games? North Melbourne?
Who
are resurgent on the weekend. North Melbourne can beat Geelong on Sunday.
Western Bulldogs down at Geelong.
That Western Bulldogs can win a game. Yep. They proved it against Richmond.
Yep. Gold Coast, Sydney.
Gold Coast is in Gold Coast, probably not.
Sydney will
start to win a game or two. It just depends when you get them. The thing with Geelong is Geelong does not play Collingwood again. Doesn't play GWS again.
They play
again,
Richmond before
doesn't,
the bye.
Doesn't play West Coast again.
Best thing, so they got the three. Yeah, they've got the good thing for you, Brian. Sydney, who are the most boring team in the competition, have got 4 or 5 Friday night games, which is your specialty.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Which I'm not doing this Friday night. I'm missing out on a game.
What are you doing?
Having a night off.
Have you been rested?
Having a night with the lovely.
Managed.
Out of interest, who's doing your role? Who's calling with Bruce? This is important.
I'm not 100% sure.
Because Bruce won't be doing that job forevermore. Forever and a day.
I think,
and I reckon the bloke who's in line in pole position is JB.
I think I don't know who's doing it, but it could be Basil.
Basil's come back.
Well, he lives in Sydney. Well, he's in Sydney on weekends.
Do you think that Brayshaw is the heir apparent to?
He's really going to answer that, isn't he?
No. This is the honesty minute. Would you like to take over from Bruce? I would love
to continue to call with Bruce for as long as he can keep going. What's the question?
I want to know that question. I would have said, how long do you want to keep calling with Bruce?
I'm going to help you out here, Brian.
My question is, seriously, what pride would you take on becoming the number one in the face of...
No, look, I'm not interested in that because that particular role... coming with that is the hosting roles, and that's not my not the thing that I do best. That's a thing that Brayshaw, Basil, Bruce, Hamish, they're all hosts as well as callers.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think to be Bruce, you've got to be able to be all those things.
Very diplomatic, very much a team player.
Of that group, Hamish is an outstanding host.
Yes, he
really is.
Absolutely.
Very, very good.
He does the majority
role.
Of hosting right now, so he's good at it. Yep.
Yeah. Well, as I said, we will talk commentary.
And snubbed on Friday night.
A little bit later on.
Is that coming up? It is coming up.
We've just got to get to talking about Carlton. Talk about teams, Ando, you talk about teams that have had a tough 6 or 7 weeks. You would have to say that Carlton is one of them. If you're watching us on the Herald Sun stream, we will let you go now, but don't forget you can get the rest of the podcast wherever you get your podcast, whether that's on the iTunes store. We're now on Spotify too, so you can get us there, but we've got to get to Sellers.
That's dangerous. That is horrible from Casbolt. I mean, when you're down by 49 points, I know you've got to kind of take some risks, but look at Brendan Bolt. He's turned that over, and he has put that into a horrible spot to turn it over, and Mason Wood could make this a 55-point margin. North came into this game bottom of the AFL ladder. I don't think they'll be bottom tonight.
Well, the Blues have been the talk of the town in recent days after their massive loss to North Melbourne. So we thought, why not go to a former Carlton captain? We see him on Fox Footy and we love chatting to him here on the Super Footy podcast. We're joined now by Mark McClure. Mark, how are you feeling about the Blues as we sit here today?
I've got some mixed feelings like everyone else. We I was there on Sunday and went out just with a couple of friends and watched the game for a little while. And I was a little bit sort of taken by their performance. But, you know, we just got to understand that sometimes that they're young, and that was and we lost four players. And you saw Richmond, they lost a few of their stars who couldn't compete against the Doggies, you know, which is quite different when you have a look at how they've been over the past. So I took that in my stride, but I still wasn't happy, to tell you the truth. I don't like some of the things they're doing. I don't like the way they play.
What about, was it the biggest thing that struck you, was it the drop-off? Because it seemed like a week prior, was the commentary was a lot about, yes, they lost, but, you know, they were close. And
yeah.
Is that where you're at?
Yeah. No, not really. I'm at another area where I think that the players, our club has always been player run. And, you know, I mean, seriously, when you're the successful, the players run the show. And these guys have got to own their own performances and own what happens on the field. It's not the coach's fault sometimes. It's not all, everyone goes and said, oh, we've got to get rid of the coach. You've got to own what you do. And you want, and it's like looking after your own house. You want to put rubbish in the backyard? No one wants to do that. And that's what they're sort of doing. So look, they're trashing themselves in a sense. And I don't care if you're 18. You can be the best tackler. You can be the best runner. You can be the best at a lot of things at 18 years of age. And it hurts me to talk about it, but they don't own their own destiny at the moment. They're not in charge of what they're doing. And they need to be told. And this is where the leadership thing comes along. What's going on here? Where are we at? Where are they going to be in 2 or 3 years' time? We're going to float along and go, oh, you know, I'm still only 19 now. I've only played 20 games. That is BS for me, total BS. They need to actually control their own destiny.
So if you were doing a report after seven rounds of footy on Carlton at the moment in a paragraph, what do you reckon it'd say, Sellers?
I'd say style of play is one. I watched the other day and I sat behind the goals just to have a look and see how the forward line operated. They don't move. They're in the wrong spots. Football hasn't changed that much. The forward line movement has changed. It's all about where you stand, where you set up. Your small's in the right spots. Making space for someone else, running to an area knowing you're not going to get the ball so you can open up for someone else. Didn't see any of that. I don't see it. And all of a sudden, the other side of it is when we get the ball and we sit there and we hold and we go back, they walk back slowly and then they chip past 5 yards. You can't operate like that. You need to mark and roll. And when they mark and roll, they win. The ball goes into the forward line and the defence gets hurt in those areas. And I think they just don't do it enough. They're not confident enough to do it. They're like young kids who want to grab the ball. I don't want to make a mistake, so I'll kick it 10 yards to someone, so it's not my fault.
When you watch Charlie Curno Sellers, and he's got a lot of upside. I won't use the word potential because it's a horrible word. A lot of upside. But he's not displaying that at the moment. My belief is that he's not fit. He looks like he's got some form of problems in his legs. I've been told it may be bone bruising. If so, he probably shouldn't be playing. But he hasn't progressed the way we would have hoped. Is that fair?
Oh, absolutely. Totally fair. I've been very critical of him. He's got a big wage. He's done a very good job in the early part of his life. But you know what? Now he needs to progress as a leader and stand out and actually control the forward line. Stand up. What are we doing here? Hang on, why are you in this space? Get out of here. But I don't know who runs the forward line. I don't know who coaches them. And I don't, what I see, it's just a mess, the forward line for me. And the other side of it is the midfield have to operate quickly. And the halfbacks have to operate quickly. You can't sit in the forward line and win the ball by chip passing. It just doesn't work.
Sellers, the club has persevered and supported Brendan Bolton this is his fourth year, 3 years and 3 years and seven games. Yep. We always wonder what is the cut-off point where the club would say we can no longer accept this. Have you got an idea in your head or a time frame in your head where if it doesn't improve, the club has to say, you know what, we have to cut. Sorry.
Yeah, I think sometimes we sit here and we look at what Clarkson did in the 4 years he was in control. Okay, they had their recruiting and they got themselves up to win a premiership in four and a bit years or whatever it was from when he took over. And that's the measuring stick. I'm not so certain that's right. You know, we've seen the Doggies come for how long? Hundreds of years, trying to rebuild. And I think we're in the same boat. I mean, I don't think our management for the last 20 years of this footy club has been average. I think that we've made poor decisions, and we've actually, in a sense, hurt today's players, in a sense, because we weren't settled. We didn't have the culture right. We don't have a culture that looks like, hey, listen, we're working harder. And look, you can work as hard as you like, but you can't work on your own. And that's where the problem lies with mine. And the young kids have fallen into that trap of, hey, listen, I'm really working hard, I'm fit, I'm do that, but you know what, who's shepherding for me? I'm going to shepherd for you. I want to push those little things around. It's about the team. The basics
in this game. You're putting it back on the players more than the coach, aren't you?
Oh, absolutely. Totally. I think Brendan Bolton's okay, and I've heard his speak, and maybe he sometimes gets a bit too technical. I'd like to see him get it back to basics and make him set a plan on how you move the ball from one end of the ground to the other in the quickest possible manner and stick with it. And if it fails, at least you keep trying, keep at it, and you entertain the people. Our people need a drink. The Carlton supporters want to have some excitement. They're not seeing a lot. They're seeing bits and pieces of it, but all of a sudden, I think you've got to work on how you can operate this football club and kick a score. Forget about the defensive side. Just go for broke and have a crack at it.
They had that excitement 40 years ago, not in 79, when you beat Collingwood to win the VFL Premiership. Under a captain coach, in Alex Jezalinko, you go back to the reunion this Saturday. Give us one overriding memory from that game, other than Harmsy back to Bomber Sheldon.
Haven't got any other.
No,
I thought it was. Look, to me, it was a really wet day, and we'd kicked 100 points on probably, I think, 18 or 19 times for that year. And we were a powerful unit, and we didn't. One thing that really sticks in my mind is we never won a Brownlow in that period of time when we won premierships. No one in our team won a Brownlow. No one won a goal kicking record. No one won a media award. No one won anything anywhere. And that's what I'm more proud of. You don't have to have a star in your side. You just got to have a lot of blokes who want to have a unity together and work for each other. And we have a bond that'll never break, I can tell you. And on Saturday, I'm going to sack the footy. I'm not going to call it. I'm going to go and have a drink with my mates and have a bit of fun. So
watch out.
That's what I'm going to do. So.
Through no fault of your own, you've become the external go-to man when it comes to Carlton. You're on 360 with us on Wednesday night, and you're on ABC Radio on Saturdays. Various journos ring you for the one reason, for your honesty. How has that settled on you? Do you like that role? Is it a role that you think you have to do? Where does it sit?
No, I don't. I don't like it at all. But I just, look, I know sometimes hold things that I don't want to say, but I just think it's time to actually let go. It's time that the players actually stood up, and I think we should put more pressure on them and ask them for themselves and say, hey, listen, do you actually want to be here? Because if you don't want to be, just keep going the way you're going. We'll move you out too. You'll go. See you later. Your job will be over. And I think that that's how it's got to go. But I don't think sometimes that we go the easy option, the easier to get rid of the coach than a whole lot of players. It's the simplest thing in the world to do. But I don't think Brendan's doing a lot wrong, to tell you the truth. They are just, at some stages, that excuse about, oh, we thought it had just happened. That's pathetic, as far as I'm concerned.
Anyway, back
it's harder to win than it is to lose, I tell you.
Back to the 79
you
grand
final. Harder to win.
Back to 79 grand final in the slop. How do you think you went?
Yeah. I went.
Yeah, how did you play individually?
I just played a roll up forward. I played on Billy most of the day.
You did play on Billy, didn't you?
Yeah, I played on Billy.
Billy Pickin, that is.
Okay. Billy played well, yeah. He played well. And
You kicked two goals. You kicked two goals. You kicked two goals. Bomber Sheldon got three. Yeah. Peter Francis got one. Wayne Harms got one. And Jimmy Buckley.
See, but I wasn't there.
Jimmy Buckley got two.
You understand. My role at that footy club was to bring the ball to the ground. We had the best mosquito fleet of anyone in the competition by a mile. And it's still remembered today. So my role was to actually contest, bring it to the ground, and let them do the work. And that's what they did.
Well, fantastic, Sellers. We really appreciate you joining us. As you say, Saturday afternoon at the MCG, Carlton versus Collingwood, there's going to be nowhere to hide for the Blues. And as I said before, there's no doubting your passion for the club. And, we really appreciate your time. So thanks so much for joining us.
And there's nowhere to hide in our lunch either, I can tell you.
You better get back in there.
See you guys. Thanks very much.
Well, as I say, there's no denying that Mark McClure, all of the we's and ours and our people that we heard there, Ando, he's passionate about the Blues. But nice little nugget from you there about Charlie Curnow.
Yeah, well, Mark McClure is sort of the Dirty Harry of AFL footy. He don't play no favourites, sellers. He just tells them like it is. Charlie Curnow, yeah, my understanding is Charlie Curnow has been playing injured. And if the ideal scenario would be for him to take a complete rest for 4 to 6 weeks, because bone bruising can, well, it's not going to get any better, put it that way. So you can say that's an excuse for Charlie, because he's clearly not playing to the level that he can play. And I was just watching the game on Sunday and thinking Dermot was commentating, and Dermot made the comment, I reckon Robbo did a story with Curnow and Dermot, how he'll be the best player in the game by this stage. I think when he said it, people probably thought it made sense. It seemed to be upward trend, but it hasn't gone the way.
No, it hasn't. Well, to be honest, that explains a lot. Clubs don't release the injuries. He's playing with a bone.
So who was injured last year, Robbo? Patrick Dangerfield injured most of the year.
Scott Pendlebury was a big one.
Bontempelli.
Pendlebury. There's three champions. Yep.
And two of them are probably in the discussion for the best player in the game at the moment. Yep. Actually, all three of them are.
Yep. And as we said, they take on Collingwood Saturday afternoon at the GBT. You got a close look at the Pies on Friday night against Port, calling that game at Marvel. Ben Reid, I know he was pretty wayward with his kicking, 1-4 in the end, but where do you reckon they sit this weekend? Because it seems to be the talk of one or the other, Reid or Cox.
He was lively, he was sharp, he was all the things that I reckon Collingwood expect him to be, and I expected him to be. He's a good player, and it's a really good question. And if it boils down to, and it's not a Mayerchek or someone else, and it's not the who's the guy that's going out injured again? Adams. If it's not Taylor, Adams going out and Mason Cox coming in for him, if it's one for the other, it's tough, because you go to recent form, and the recent form says that Cox has been in good form. Then you go to the football now, and who's the best for the long run. And there's no doubt that Ben Reid's football intellect is way better than Mason Cox. Where to go? His ability to be able to adapt from forward to back or to the wing or even into the ruck. He can do all of those things. So for me, Ben Reid's, if you're making me pick between Ben Reid and Mason Cox, it's not even an argument. It's Ben Reid every time. But if you're asking me to rely on someone that's not going to get injured, I'd probably go Mason Cox.
Have you seen Ben Reid move that well in the last couple of years? No, he looked like he was 21.
I think did he have four games in the Rezzies?
Yeah, I think it was four. Yeah. In a forward line that I haven't seen the like of before, when it's Hoskin, Elliott, DeGoey, who's the other little bloke?
Stevenson.
How was he playing? Thomas. And it's just so quick and so hard to match up on. So you get an opposition defence, they traditionally play two talls. So it's Geelong. So they play Blissars and Harry Taylor. You're not sure who to play. Blissars can probably play small. It's a really unusual forward line, and that first quarter is as good a quarter as I've seen any side.
Reid will get goals out of his intellect and knowledge of the game and long standing in the game. Whereas Mason Cox, for me, he's good, but you have to set him up.
I think it's Cox hands down.
Do you?
Yeah, I think they've already made the decision.
Why?
Because Reid's been playing the VFL. I know he's been hurt. This was decided last year. We are going with Mason Cox. So we have no trust in Ben Reid.
So why did they play Reid then?
Well, Cox was injured.
Mm. So you reckon he's just a
fill-in? I think he'll come straight back in.
Right, and Reid will go out?
Yeah, and I don't think Buck should fit them all in. Like, play your midfields, play your defence, and play your forward group. Mm. Reid, you're going up against Mason Cox. We're not going to put you both in, and we're going to push Josh Thomas out. No, that's not going to happen. They're all playing. The position comes down to between Mason Cox, and I just think that we all know about the height. He can take marks, but because they kick it to him, the smalls all know where to go.
Well, it's the convention.
Near Cox.
Isn't it? It's the conventional, and Buck said that after the game. It was to play them both with Mayerchek is to stray from convention. And it's not the setup that they knew. I mean, the decision might be made for them.
I'd be surprised if Mason, he goes out. Give me a player that's played 30 years of football as against one that's played 2 years of football any day of the week.
Well, I reckon he's out.
You would have seen him with the roaming. Mason Cox was in a moon boot. on Friday night.
Yeah, but that's all precautionary and stuff.
He didn't snub you?
No, he spoke to me. No, did anyone snub me? I don't care.
What about...
continually snubbed.
Well, clearly, the pain is.
Clearly you do care because you...
He's been snubbed all his life. Since he was a baby, they were snubbing him.
What about the rivalry, BT? You played in 10-odd Carlton v Collingwood throughout the 80s.
Can you remember?
It was
too old.
It was
Lauren,
so, well...
He played in 11.
11? I said 10-ish.
He kicked 37 goals, which isn't bad.
Just blow my average.
Your last game. Playing for Collingwood against Carlton. You got any recollections of your last game?
No, none.
No, nor should you have. You sat on the bench for, I think, 97% of the game. Yeah. Round two, 1990. Yeah. Lee took you off and you got this dressing gown on. There's a photo of you.
So
not
glamorous.
Not looking very happy.
Hang on, was the book out by now?
No.
The book was coming.
Oh, this was pre-book.
The book that he had nothing to do with that I apparently wrote.
We had a lot on that year. Carlton, the Carlton Collingwood thing. Look, it's dropped off. You know, the crowds have dropped off, and people's interest have dropped off, and it's not the thing that it once was. It doesn't have what it did have attached in the 80s, 70s, 80s, and even in the early 90s. It's just not what it is because of the way Carlton have been over the last 10, 15 years. But it was every bit equivalent. The Richmond Carlton game, the Collingwood Carlton game, was every bit equivalent to what Anzac Day is today back in those days.
Well. Another massive game Sunday afternoon at the MCG. Hawthorn taking on the GWS Giants. Well, there's been so much talk about the GWS Giants, including on this podcast, given that John Anderson is a very, very big fan of the Orange Tsunami and the way that they're going about it. And we're always thrilled to have senior coaches here on the Super Footy podcast. And we're joined today by the man with the keys to the Ferrari, as he's been known in recent years, Leon Cameron, senior coach of the GWS Giants. Leon, how are you up in the Harbour City?
Yeah, good, thanks, Lauren. I thought that statement was gone, well and truly buried, but you've now regurgitated that up again, have you?
I reckon you hate that more than anything. When Lauren said it, I thought, hang on, that's the last thing you want to hear. 2016, maybe, it was fair, but you still got a lot of top-end talent on
your
list.
Well, it's purring.
Well, that's no, but Leon would like to think that's more to do with how he's coaching than with his coaches, I would think. But just on that... You've had Whitfield out recently. Deledio, is Deledio back this week?
He's due to train fully this week and put his name up for selection. So, he went out round three, just on the eve of round three. He's had his 5 or 6 weeks of rehab. So, as we know, we've got to, treat it sort of week by week. We know his calf issues. We don't shy away from that. And hopefully we can get a good run at it. And, we can string a couple of months of footy together.
So, Leon, just on that, with reasonably long-term injuries to players and especially your gun players, what goes through your mind when they do get declared fit and they come back as to whether you're going to pick them to play in the seniors or in a lesser grade? What things are you throwing up and how long can a player miss where he just has to play another level first?
It's a great question, BT, and I think... you're going to have a philosophy on it, and I think then you've got to. So you have a philosophy, and then you've probably got to then say, well, I've got to treat some players differently because of training load, previous injuries, how long they've been out, the training load they've actually done leading up to it, were they on top of their game beforehand, age, so many things. So that's going to be a really good discussion on Brett on Thursday because he's had some interruptions, we know, and so does he need a run at the lower level? Do we think he's capable of coming back in? It's a bit harder when you've got, a guy coming towards the back end of his career that might have been out for a couple of three or four times over the past 2 years with his injuries compared to maybe, say, a Whitfield who might have played... a year and a half straight, he's out for 4 or 5 weeks, but then he was in great form and his body's in good shape, and now can you bring him straight back in? So they're all different scenarios, I reckon.
Credit to you and the club on your retention of star players, which brings us to Jeremy Cameron. Geelong's made it obvious. They've been open about their interest in him, which is natural enough. How confident are you about Jeremy staying at the Giants after next year, where he's contracted to?
I'm being a bit biased, but I'm really confident because of just what's happened in the past 4 or 5 years. Maybe you would have to sell the whole kitchen sink and the whole house to keep players early parts, but now it's, you point out to where the club's going, where we've been, our membership's now over 25,000, pushing 26. We hope to get that to close to 30 this year. Our crowds are growing, and obviously we've been in finals the last 3 years, and which is always enticing for a player to stay at his footy club. So it's you know, that's it's easier for me. So in terms of the level of confidence, really, really confident, because I mean, you know, Jeremy's obviously know they're playing some really good footy now, but he'd have been here from the start. It's his eighth year at the club, and he spent, you know, over half his footy career here already. And I don't see any issues with Jeremy wanting to spend the, you know, the next 7 or 8 years at our footy club as well. I mean, Toby Green's locked away for a long period of time. We've seen Josh Kelly put pen to paper. You know, I'm confident in Stephen Canelio as well. So, yeah, these key people that play a big part in your footy club on your playing list, I think they want to be sort of one club players and started, and they want to finish here.
You played Saturday and you got the Hawks on this Sunday coming. What does a coach do on a Tuesday? Where are you right now, and what have you done this morning, and what are you doing this afternoon?
So we sort of shifted into, we've got three Sunday games in a row, actually. So we shifted into a Sunday program, which is day off on Monday, Tuesday, review today. We reviewed the game today. They have a half-day study block. So our coaches have done all reviews this morning, and now that the players are now left, we jump into some more reviews, just as coaches box discussion, what worked, what didn't, a few other little things in preparation for tomorrow. Tomorrow is more of a full day where we review the game a little bit more and then start talking about the Hawks, and then Thursday main day, and then Friday off, travel Saturday, captain drum, play Sunday. So in here at the office, be it, or, you know, 5 or 6 o'clock, discussing some stuff with our coaches and starting to have discussions about the Hawks.
What do you do outside of footy then, Leon, or is there not much time for that? Because we often hear players, they seem to be a bit split. Some love getting up to Sydney, and, you know, a lot of them talk about that they're out of the AFL fishbowl of Melbourne. Whereas Dylan Scheel, when he came to Essendon, he sort of spoke about how when he retires, he can see himself moving back to Sydney because he enjoyed it there so much. What do you do to get away from footy, or don't you?
Oh, look, we all know. I mean, you guys would know more than most. I mean, when the footy season's on, that's our job. Our job is to be fully entrenched in footy. And whether you're writing an article in The Sun, or you're commentating BT, I mean, your week's and your weekend of preparation for what's coming. And we're no different. Well, we prepare. And you just got to try to find that fine line of having some balance. I mean, I'm lucky I've got my married with three kids, so my downtime is lots of sport with them. I watch their sport on the weekends when the gaps open up, so I love doing that. You know, midweek, if you get the night before the day off, I mean, it's chill out time for me. But basically, you know, we go hard Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and sort of have a rest sort of Wednesday night, Thursday, go hard again Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And so in between that, you sort of fill some gaps, and family time's a priority, and that's what I do. But you know, it's a great environment to be in. Is it high pressure? It is, but you know, it's a choice. We have a choice, and I'm lucky enough to have that choice.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, as you say, we're lucky. It's a fantastic industry to be a part of, and I'm sure when you're sitting third on the ladder, you're pretty happy with where things are at. And obviously, Hawks on Sunday, so it's a massive task ahead. And we can't thank you enough. As you said, it's a hell of a busy day for you, and particularly early in the week. So thank you for joining us, Leon, and good luck on Sunday and for the rest of the season ahead.
Good on you, guys. Thanks for your time.
Well, it's time, as always, to catch up with our friends at the Tab. Gerard Daffy, great to have you with us, and another massive weekend of games. Give us your standouts.
The Sydney v Essendon game is a big one to start the weekend, Lauren, because Sydney, are they gone? Maybe they are. They're $2.50 outsiders. That's unheard of at home. Essendon $1.53. They've got a bit of work to do from the weekend. Interesting, the early money is with the Swans there, even though they're the outsiders.
What about the showdown? I love a showdown. I'm yet to get to Adelaide Oval for one, but there's so much on the line Saturday night.
Yeah, there's something else, aren't they? And I think there's big expectations here at Port Adelaide now. They were pretty ordinary last week, but it was against Collingwood. They opened at $2.30. And probably the biggest move of the round so far, quickly into $2, Adelaide out to $1.80. So there's nothing at all between these two sides. just because you're an outsider in a showdown doesn't mean that you can't win. There's been plenty of those wins down through the years as well.
What about the Sunday late one over at Perth Stadium, Freo and Richmond? I would imagine there's been a bit of movement given the results of last weekend.
Yeah, there has been, and punters are really apprehensive to back Fremantle at any time, particularly when they're favourites, but given that they're at home and there's still a bit of a query on a couple of those injured players for Richmond, they've been a mover as well, Freo. $1.80 into $1.73, so favourites, but not really short. Richmond at $2.10 at the moment.
Geelong, too, game clear at the top of the ladder. Pretty handy percentage of 148. I would imagine they still sit top of the tree for the flag market.
Yeah, this is a strange one. We've currently got Collingwood and Geelong equal favourites at 375, but nobody wants to touch the Cats. I don't know what they've got to do. And, of course, they are one of the sides that have beaten Collingwood. Behind them, we've got the Giants at $7 now. There's been a bit of interest in them. West Coast out to $9. Punters have dropped off them. They want to see them win and win convincingly. I know they got that win last week, but it was a scratchy win. Richmond at $11. And oddly enough, Essendon this week have been a mover inwards, 21 into 17. But as you would expect, Collingwood, Geelong, GWS to a lesser degree dominate that market.
Absolutely. And all the talk, of course, about the Coleman this week with big Jeremy Cameron. We're hoping he's on track to boot 100 goals. And I tell you what, he must have shortened within an inch of his life.
Well, he has. And who would have thought in this day and age that somebody would kick 100 goals? We've got to go back to Buddy Franklin. I think it was 2008, the last time we saw a century in the Coleman medal. He is on track at the moment and he's an odds-on favourite now to win the Coleman. He's $1.75. He's on 30 goals at the moment. He's got a very handy lead. Tom Lynch is the next in line at $6. Then Ben Brown, we haven't seen the best of him yet. He's at $10. Jordan DeGoey at $11. And then Franklin in the market at $15. But you'd think if he maintains the form that he's got, he's on track to kick 100, but more importantly, to win that Coleman medal.
Unfortunately, unlike some of my colleagues, I wasn't clever enough to jump on Jezza early, so I'm still kicking myself over that. Jared Duffy from the Tab, it's been great to have you with us. TAB, who are you backing this AFL season? Wherever you do it, make sure you do it responsibly. Jared, we'll catch you next week.
Thanks, Lauren.
The inside out, right foot banana. Don't tell me, Dustin, wowee.
Commentary Central. We're here with Brian Taylor, of course. He's one of the lead men.
And he'll have no comment.
At Channel 7. Romy,
you'd be in the top 10 commentators, wouldn't you, Brian?
No.
I'm just interested to canvass.
So. Top 10
what?
Commentators? Where? When history of football or currently in football?
Oh, currently in football.
In the last week.
I hope he can sneak into the top 10 somewhere. If he can't,
well,
he's in a bit of trouble.
Dub him. He probably can't dub himself that. But as I mentioned earlier, the great Mike Williamson left us in this past week, and it has got commentators talking, you know, the talk of the town at the moment, how they go about it, different styles. And I'm always intrigued because I obviously watch a lot of footy, as we all do, pretty much every game, every weekend. And I must admit, I don't know a lot about how commentators operate, and particularly in the TV sphere. So, Brian, enlighten us. How does it work? How do you decide who's going to go? How do you work out who you're going to call with?
First of all, Mike Williamson, I used to do handball clinics at shopping centres with him, and that was my start into the promotions of football.
But what sort of bloke?
Very confident of himself and very much a full book on himself. But other than that, that made him a great guy. He was great fun.
I had a query yesterday from a great caller who said, I never met Mike Williamson. What sort of fellow was he? And why did he leave Channel 7 so early? Because he left when he was 47. He called 15 grand finals in a row and then left because apparently he kept saying to Ron Casey, I want more money, I'm going to leave. Mm. 1 year, Ron Casey said, fair enough, go. And that's he was a really good fella.
So how does commentary work? Is that what you're
saying?
Well,
I'm just interested to know. So you sit next to the guy. We hear things, you know, the whisper column with Scott Gullen. It's typically, you know, it's heavily TV, media-based, you know, about different commentators that don't want to work with each other or do want to work with each other. And Do you have a preferred partner?
There's a thing called chemistry, and you know you work better with some people than others simply because of the way that you communicate and get on.
Oh, like all of us.
I mean, we're all working reasonably well here together at the moment, so it's a good environment to be in. But there are environments where it doesn't work as well. And so the chemistry is the number one thing. And I often think about the people making the decisions at both the radio networks and the TV networks. They never ask the people involved in the actual commentary team, How do you think you'd go with such and such? No one ever asks us. We just get thrown together, and you hope it all sort of blends and comes out nicely at the other end.
Were you fearful before you started calling with Bruce McAvaney? Be really honest. I reckon you went to Sydney about 2 years ago, and there was a trial game during the year, and you were very you withheld yourself because I know you pretty well, and it worked. It did work. The chemistry. Bruce McAvaney's a very generous commentator.
Yeah, he is. Bruce, it is about being generous. You've got to get with a commentator that wants the other guy to be as good as he is. And Bruce is like that. Bruce is like a coach. He's always slapping you on the back and saying, and when you're down as a commentator, he knows you're down. And he gives you a little tap on the back and say, come on, Brian. And then when you've done a really nice passage of play, he gets right on you and says, you know, well done, gives you a tap on the back and makes you feel good about it.
He says that live, doesn't he?
Yeah. And there's a lot of touching of each other just to signal, hey, mate, it's your go.
So you say 30 seconds.
Yep, 30 seconds. And I go really short. Some don't. Some, like, if you called with an older caller like Smokey Dawson or Harry Bites or any of those guys, they'll go 2 minutes. And for me, I can't because I'm high energy and 30 seconds is the way I want to go. So Bruce was a bit longer, but Bruce came back a little bit and I went out a little bit to sort of meet in the middle somewhere, and that's how it works.
You're the entertainer. So are you worrying about entertaining, or do you have Bruce qualities where you try and make your fellow callers better? Or do you have to concentrate on yourself?
It is, when you're in my position, you're a young guy coming up, it's about getting it right first and foremost. And then once you feel you've got it right, then you can start to develop and do what Bruce does. I notice that when Bruce is calling, he's thinking about everyone else. And I'm thinking, how the hell does he do that? I'm worried about myself. I'm worried about getting it right myself. And it'd be really hard for me to put my concentration onto asking my partners questions. He does that. So
is that slip for you? Is that coin drop for you, or you, because you're such a showman and not just a showman? You love your footy. You can tell you love your footy. Are you very much aware that when you're on, you have to be on, and then when it flicks,
I go with the game. See, some people, a commentator will go prepared, ultra prepared, like Bruce or like Hamish. Or whoever it is, and they've got a million stats and they're going to get that out and they're really, really good at it. I go with not too much because I'm already calling with a guy like Bruce or Hamish who's already got that information. That's their specialty. Yeah. We don't need to double up on that. We don't need to have two people doing the same thing. So I go with raw emotion. So if the game's up, I'm up. And if the game's on, I'm with it. If the game's slow and a little bit boring, then comes the questions and the
talk. No, then comes you talking about any other topic except football. You know when you're bored.
1989, grand final, you can listen to any caller, just a sole caller, not a team. So you've got three to pick over your journey in footy. I reckon Mike Williamson might be one. Mm-hmm. Is that fair? Because you grew up with Mike Williamson. And you were probably over in Perth then, over Mandurah.
Yep.
Okay,
he'd be one of mine, Mike Williamson.
Okay, another
the
two.
Other two. The other two.
The other two best commentators, Bruce McAvaney without any doubt.
Yep.
And then the third one probably gets pretty hard. Gee,
special comments, man, because you've got two callers.
We're going to special comments, are we? Special comments guy, I think, is probably, without offending anyone that I'm with at the moment, because they're all still getting to that level, I think is Gary Lyon. I think Gary Lyon probably got to a level that...
That seems to be a common thread. Gary Lyon's that sees the game that well.
As you said, your first ever...
And Dermot sees it really well as well.
First ever gig was with Mike Williamson in a shopping centre, as you said. Was he one that inspired... Do you model... As you said, you've got to carve your own path, or walk your own path, I should say.
No, look, that's easy.
Do you model yourself on air? Do you look to people?
You don't, but you admire people. Rex Hunt was up and going when I was calling. He was, you know, he was the great entertainer.
He was the biggest name in the country,
and I just couldn't get enough of Rex.
I used to hang off the front of the 3AW box at Waverley. We used to run across the ground after the siren, and we'd hang off the front of Rex's box. He'd have the windows open, and we'd all sit there, and he'd sign hats.
You're lucky you didn't throw a chocolatier. That was one of his goes. Rex is the most entertaining.
It's so compelling. You automatically do little things that they do because they were entertaining and they were great things to do. And so, you know, when you're out there and you notice other young callers calling now, they do bits of what you do. And it just flows on like that. Everyone picks the best out of another commentator.
Now, just very quickly for my last question. This is probably the most serious conversation I've ever listened to you on radio or on a podcast.
Just trying not to offend anyone.
Well, your Triple M background is a tasty little environment. You got to survive. Everyone's having a crack.
Oh yeah, it's a dog eat dog there.
Oh, it's worse than that. It's a shark. I remember I worked with Brian Taylor one day in a pre-game, and I first learnt about the Triple M environment. Brian said to me at a break, he said, "Right,
we're going to talk about this subject. You know, how do you feel? And I said, oh, I'm going to say this. He goes, yeah, I agree with you. I said, okay, so we come back from the ad break.
Good luck.
Brian asked me a question. I said what I said, and he goes, that's rubbish. Yeah, exactly. And I turned around and I said, you're a fake. You're a fake.
That's an old trick, that one.
That's the oldest in the book, I would imagine.
So who snubbed you?
Yeah, talk us through about Roaming Brian.
Someone snubbed you on Friday night.
So the whole segment, do you know the segment was born out
of... Well, it's Martin...
Brundle in the Formula One. So that's where it was. And the whole thing was that if you watch Martin Brundle walk down pit lane before the race, about half people want to talk to him and the other half don't want to talk to him, right? So, and it's equally as good TV, whether they talk to you or that they don't talk to you says something about the person. And let's not forget, it's about the pitches, not what I say. So you go down into Collingwood rooms and they are the most difficult club to deal with at the moment for me. But for a journo, they might be very, very different. But for the segment that I want to do and the Channel 7 want to do, they really haven't bought into that. So that's okay. Some clubs buy into it and some don't. So if you don't buy into it, you're not getting exactly what you want. But you can't get everything you want. So that has been a little bit different. But I'm happy for like Bucks walked off the other night and he was on his way to a presser. That's fine if he don't want to talk, because the pictures say as much about him as what they do about me being snubbed. And it leaves the viewer to make up their mind on what they saw then.
And it's so real time, isn't it? Because obviously we go into the game, we don't know who's going to win, you don't know which rooms you're going to end up in. There's a lot of family and friends.
We saw
a lot of talk about Xavier Dursner last week.
You're basically
just relying on players to...
Yeah, like if I see a player talking to someone, I go... Who are you talking to?
Yeah.
Who are they? Introduce us. I hope they're okay to be introduced, and that's where it lies. It's as simple as that. But I want to say this about that segment for any media person out there, any club listening. When we roll up at the door, if I were a media person at any and someone like myself come down to the rooms after to give them 15 minutes of national TV exposure, I would, as the media person, meet that person at the door and say, Brian, here's 15 things we want you to do in the rooms. Here's 15 things that we think will be entertaining and that suit us. Go ahead and do them. They might be sponsor plugs. They might be interviewing their newest sponsor. It might be interviewing the dietitian who's got a chalk milk, whatever it is. And I can't believe that clubs haven't woken up to the fact that that 15 minutes after the game is theirs to do whatever they want with on national TV, straight off the song, which is peaking in terms of ratings. A lot of people love the song. Straight off the song, it's theirs to do what they want, yet half of them don't want to grab it.
Well, I would be firmly in that camp because you pinned me a few weeks ago and put me completely on the spot. I completely went to water. It's the thing with live TV. The red light goes on and you...
What would you do, John, if you were interviewing someone, an old chap over here, wandered up, at your age now, in your age, and you've known each other for 35
years? He could be an explosive proposition.
I've got no doubt that John wouldn't just walk away and say, oh, there you go, Brian.
It depends on what your relationship was like with El Chapo, I suppose. Mine's okay. I'm pretty fine.
That's why you'd find it easier to say, nick off.
Yeah.
I reckon for the journo, it's
probably... You wouldn't tolerate me.
No, you're right, actually.
Of course you wouldn't.
it's going to be, I'm sure, another fascinating edition of Roaming Brian. Well, not this week. You've got the week off, exactly. So we've got to wait another week for Roaming Brian.
Romance Friday.
Another massive weekend of footy. Anyone with a stirring weekend headline that they'll think will come out of this weekend's games? Unfortunately, I think... been a bit of a theme of this week's podcast. I think it'll centre around the Blues, even though they play Saturday. I think by Monday it will still be...
Yeah, I think you're probably right. The GWS out of sight, out of mind a bit. They're coming to Melbourne this weekend.
Yep.
They play Hawthorn.
Come on, Jetta.
Sunday afternoon.
I think
Jeremy.
We'll be talking about GWS on Monday.
And Jeremy Cameron.
And Jeremy Cameron, yeah. And Stephen Cornelio and Toby Green and, you know, Lockie Whitfield and all the other superstars on that side.
Will we be reading about Gary Ablett starring against North? We'll have to wait and see as we sit here at the moment. Gary's set to challenge at the tribunal. So
he'll play.
Well, that's it for the Super Footy podcast for round 8. We will be back same place, same time next week. Make sure you get us wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Wooshka. We're all over it. So make sure you rate us, leave a review so that others can find us, and tweet in your questions at Super Footy. We'll see you at the game.